Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Recorded live in front of a window in the heart of the metropolis known as Monsteropolis, a home to monsters, denizens from around the world. Monsteropolis is a show about legends, anomalies, and monsters. I'm your host, one of them. My name is Seth Breedlove.
I'm your other host, Mark Matzke.
And this week's episode is centered around the Bermuda Triangle. This is the first of what we're finally describing as the Triangle Trilogy.
Yes.
Very alliterative. We're going to talk about basically three window areas, and I'm sure other window areas are going to come up because I really want to talk about the Bennington Triangle at some point here. The idea is that we're going to talk about these sort of window areas. Do you want to describe what window areas are first before we even dive into
one of them? Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah,
I mean, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, first of all, we end up talking about these in terms of triangles, generally speaking, and I think that that has almost exclusively to do with the Bermuda Triangle. But it's a convenient way of talking about a location that seems to have a magnified sense of unexplained phenomena happening within it. And some people refer to that as areas of that are thin, meaning like the veil between what we think of as material existence is very thin between that and like the supernatural realm. So what's implied there is that, you know, normal everyday life, there's sort of a space between those two areas. But in other locations, for whatever reason, and we don't know what the reason is necessarily, perhaps at different places and different times, the space between those two realms becomes smaller and thinner, and things have a way of passing through, going either direction. So that's sort of the idea behind a window area and the whole term of a flap where you have, you know, business as usual and a normal history in a location or a village for a long time. And then all of a sudden you have Bigfoot sighted or a big black cat. And then those are seen over the course of a couple days or a couple weeks, and then they're never seen again. And the idea that some people have suggested is that it came through this thin area, appeared, and then went back to wherever it came from.
Who do you know who coined that phrase?
Well, I think, I don't know if he coined it, but John Keel is kind of pointed at as somebody who originated the concept of the window. The window area, I think, is pretty much Keel.
Okay. What was that based on, like his research? Was there like a particular story that kind of brought him to that idea, or is this?
I think it's the sort of the aggregate of the just the sheer volume of, you know, it's kind of the pattern that was described of, you know, we haven't had anything weird happen around here, and then all of a sudden we're trying to deal with a big black dog, or and then kind of predictably, people go out looking, you have the posses form hunting these things, and then they just fade into obscurity. And question being, if they were a real creature, where did they go? You know, that's, I think, behind sort of Keel's ideas. And then later on, kind of locating those around three areas made the triangle very popular way of talking about it.
Well, one thing that I noticed about these three particular triangles we're going to cover over the next 3 weeks is it's kind of a cool difference between each one, or dichotomy between each one. The Bermuda's very much very, I mean, on the surface at least, it seems very supernatural. It's also much more epic.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about giant death tolls and mm-hmm. missing planes and missing boats and,
right.
and wormholes and all that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. then Bridgewater seems much more, maybe I said that backwards. Maybe Bridgewater's more supernatural and the other almost more paranormal is what I think I meant to say. Because Bridgewater seems sort of rooted in the occult and weird like ritual killings and things like that, and
right.
then like hauntings and this bizarre history.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of similarities between Bridgewater and Point Pleasant, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that when you were
yeah.
kind of looking them
right.
into them. And then you've got the Sasquatch Triangle, which very, very much like kind of, I mean, depending on your particular view of that subject, is seems like sort of a cryptozoological mysterious triangle area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's cool that each of these is very unique or different from the others that we're talking
yeah.
about, and it'll each kind of open up a different avenue of talking about them too. So Bermuda, this triangle sort of you've probably got a lot more history written down. So I tweeted out or Facebooked or whatever that your research, because I know how you are. And it's like the exact opposite of me, because like I'm like, finally, like, well, I should probably do some research for these shows we're recording tomorrow. So like I started by, like doing my typical YouTube late night viewing of like whatever triangle documentaries I could kind of find. And I ended up watching a terrible one.
Yeah.
I think it was Naked Science was the name.
Oh,
of the,
okay.
Yeah. Naked Science, the Bermuda Triangle. The only thing I can say about it that I liked was John Quasar mm-hmm. was on it. Is that how you say his last name, Quasar?
I assume so.
Okay, because
I'm just going phonetically on
that's
that.
That's the coolest last name of anyone ever.
His book is really good.
I knew you would want to mention that. So I watched documentaries, and then today I did do a little bit more like reading and stuff, but I've always been mildly interested in the Bermuda Triangle. It's why like Invasion on Chestnut Ridge begins the way it does, is because mm-hmm. the place everyone thinks about when you say there's this place where like really weird stuff happens, everyone goes to the Bermuda Triangle, whether they're into the paranormal or not. That tends to be, you know, like the location that everyone thinks of is like, that's probably for most people, that's all they're aware of. They probably think there's only the Bermuda Triangle where there's like this one location where really weird stuff, paranormal stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like we're obviously talking about the fact there are multiple locations kind of around the world where these window areas occur. But the Bermuda Triangle started with sort of like when Columbus and everyone were coming over, everyone, like literally all of...
all
of Britain, they're just
the European cruises are
yeah,
coming
yeah.
over.
Yeah. When they were coming through, they talked about strange lights in the sky and their compasses not working. So there was always this built-in history of weird activity in the area. Can you expand that? Because I'm sure you've already
There's the.
Let
whole...
me tell you from the scrolls.
I borrowed these
yeah.
from the National Archive, but the Sargasso Sea stuff. Did you read any of that, like these wide swaths of vegetation in the water?
You check it out. The Sargasso Sea is
yeah.
a strange area within Bermuda Triangle that has no shores, but bounded by ocean currents on all sides. I told you I had notes.
I know. You yeah. walked in with notes. That
yeah.
was exciting.
Shocker.
So, yeah, I mean, that goes back to that same time period where you would actually, boats would actually get stuck in that stuff. And would have to try and figure a way out. It's not a problem these days, I guess. If you have a normal outboard motor, you can get through that stuff with no problem.
There's an island in there, and I found this out yesterday that I thought was interesting. And like people live there now, and it's like inhabited and everything. But at one time, it was called the Devil's Isle or the Island of Devils, and it was because I guess there's a bird. It was called that because of the strange sounds that emanated from the island. They've later discovered that it was just birds. Unfortunately, for those of us who were very excited at the idea of some sort of island inhabited by devils.
Yeah. But, they're devil birds, perhaps. I don't know.
I thought that was a cool side story, and that was part of that historical context for the Bermuda Triangle. Was like there's always been sort of a strange undercurrent, no pun intended, to that entire area of the world. Like there's always been ships that have gone missing there over the last 200 years. I don't know if you have stats in front of you. I don't, but
yeah, I have some. But it, what I found with this and even with the Bridgewater Triangle is that the stats are really fluid. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all over the place. In fact, even as far as talking about acreage and square footage in square miles, it just depends on what source you're looking at.
It's like this with any triangle, I think, because. Mm-hmm. This even the Sasquatch Triangle, I consider the northernmost tip the end of like the Strasbourg, but depending on whose stuff you're reading online, it's another the northernmost tip is somewhere else. So
right,
so I can totally see that with like the boundary lines and all that. So when do you know how many ships or like a rough number of like how many ships have supposedly gone down?
Yeah, I think in Quasar's book, if that this is the right source, it was 200. Anywhere from 200 to 1,000 incidents over the past 500 years in the last century, meaning the 20th century, definitely looking at 50 ships and 20 planes that are absolutely unaccounted for.
And there was just a missing or a plane that went down in that area like last year in 2017. I read three lives lost. That's I wasn't laughing at the when I was just laughing at the differences between those numbers.
Yeah, to go right.
From, like it's anywhere from 200 to 1,000.
Yeah, I know.
That's a huge number. The biggest death toll. Comes from the Cyclops. I don't know. I didn't write down the year that went down, but it was early 1900s, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. The ship.
Yeah, 300 plus dead. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 324 dead, something like that.
Yeah, no, that's right.
The ship just went down. They don't know why it went down. There are theories as to why it went down. Did they ever actually even find that ship?
No.
Okay, that ship was never found. The theory there's this story actually kind of grabbed me. I don't know about you, but like the theories as to why it went down are anything from because it's during World War II. The theory was either that the ship's captain was somehow like a secret Nazi or a Nazi sympathizer, or the ship was overloaded, or there's all these various theories. But that ship was never found, which is really interesting, especially when you consider the fact that there are 300 plus people on board the ship when it sinks. So monster,
something just came through the window, the window area.
Monster viewer just wandered up behind us.
Yeah. So let's just say, because I don't think we have yet the 3 points on the triangle.
Yeah, you should probably do that because I didn't write that down.
Yeah. You're talking about Miami at one corner, Bermuda at the other, and Puerto Rico. So, again, what you're talking about is a very fluid sense of size. I mean, some people say 500,000 square miles, but then you'll get other people who push that out to like three times that size because they want to include the West Indies or the Gulf of Mexico, actually, you know, go on the complete other side of Florida. And it just... you know, we'll get into it a little bit more, but just depending on the researcher and what cases they want to include and other evidence, they want to expand the size and the shape.
Okay, so we got kind of the location out of the way. Can we go through real quick, because we already talked about the Cyclops. Can we maybe talk about some of the incidents that have taken place in there that have sort of helped cement the reputation this area has, and then we could get into some of our own favorite like side story, like the theories as to what.
Oh yeah,
because that's part of what I think the lore, part of the lure of the Bermuda Triangle for me has always been like all the different insane theories and non-insane theories that people posit as to you know, to explain what's gone on in the Bermuda Triangle. So why don't you start? Like, what are some of the really well-known incidents that have taken place?
Yeah, I think probably the most well-known and the one that kind of brought the Bermuda Triangle into public consciousness is this happened in 1945, and the so-called Flight 19, where you had five Navy planes that completely vanished on a training mission. And, you know, the chilling part of that is that there was radio contact all throughout. And
Over hours.
Yeah. Even, and the part that really I find very creepy is that they were getting radio transmissions well after the time when the fuel should have run out in these planes. And that's part of the mystery, is sort of that recurs throughout the Bermuda Triangle cases, is that you have these sort of delays happening in radio transmission, or you can hear the people in the plane talking, but they can't hear you. And so there's a sort of interference that takes place. But in this case, you know, they theorize that they ran out of fuel at some point. No planes were ever found. And then the very large search plane that went out immediately afterward to look for them.
Yeah, two search planes go out looking for them. And they're those flying, they call them, what, like a flying rescue plane, Martin Mariner flying boat. So it's a plane that can also float if it needs to, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of the reason why those were the planes that went out, was that they had landed on the ocean, they could pick them up. They got two of those planes. The reason I jumped in there, this is the only incident I wrote down, so I want to make sure I can prove I did some research on this. It's probably worth mentioning too, like, the planes that went down, there were 14 people in the initial Flight 19 when it goes down. On this rescue boat or rescue plane that eventually goes missing, there's 13.
Ooh,
yeah, the number 13. That boat also goes missing, and they don't know what happened to so they don't know what happened to Flight 19, obviously, and they also don't know what happened to the rescue plane. There were two rescue planes, only one came back.
Mm-hmm. So a total of six planes go completely unaccounted for.
Yeah.
They just vanish.
And it's something I found out from watching this documentary last night, the Naked Science show. There was a theory that the guy that was in charge of Flight 19, actually made it out alive. I don't know what this was based on, but supposedly made it out and was rescued by the people from the Bahamas there. They get him, or Bermudians? Maybe it's the Bermudians. That would make it the Bermudians. They rescue the flight captain. He goes to an island and never comes back because of the fact that he'll be court-martialed.
Wow.
And eventually marries a native woman and lives on one of the islands.
No kidding. I've never heard that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It was in the documentary I watched last night. You know, like, I don't know what it was based on. I don't know if there was some guy out there claiming to be the captain years later or what, but it seemed to be something that they were throwing around.
Hmm.
Just to throw that wrench into the whole
thing. Right. And I think, like, in the case of the search planes, I mean, you're talking about people with vast experience. You know, those were not trainees.
Even the captain. The thing that stuck with me was, like, everyone that they talked to, because the cool thing about this doc is there were two other guys in it that were on the that would have been coming up with him around the same time, that were based out of the same base, all that stuff. And they both seem flabbergasted even to this day by the fact that this happened.
Yeah.
Because he should have known what he was doing, should have known better. In fact, they ordered him to relinquish command to one of his trainees because of the fact that he was clearly not with it when they were talking to him on the radio. They told him to relinquish command, and he clearly ignored that order and just kept going.
Yeah, it's that seems to be, again, a theme that runs through a number of these cases, is confusion on the part of the pilot or those who are in the plane, you know, and it's described in various ways, but there seems to be a phenomena that the best way they can describe it is calling it an electronic fog that they either see around the plane or down by the water, and it's very disorienting.
Let me tell you about it.
Please.
That's also known as a Hutchison effect. Did you know that?
You
didn't know that?
No.
I gotcha.
I'm going to school here.
Hold on. These are what my notes say. It has been heard several times that ships and aircraft get engulfed in some kind of electronic fog, and the fog keeps moving with the ship or the plane, so they cannot escape this fog. And eventually all electronic equipment and other instruments start malfunctioning. Then the ships and airplanes either disintegrate or disappear without a trace. Vancouver-based scientist John Hutchison, through his experiments, has shown occurrence of electronic fog that causes some strange phenomena. So it is a legit, this is a legit thing, or at least something they think, you know, like has some sort of scientific basis. But this electronic fog is sort of the most common response to what could be causing some of the, the, especially planes, it seems like, within the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, and so it seems to have a disorienting effect for whatever reason, and then either the disappearance happens, or, you know, there's cases that I looked at, and I think this one of them was in Quasar's book, that was really very cinematic, because you had this was a boat, and it was pulling a barge, and the barge was actually enveloped in this fog. So the boat was like going full throttle forward, trying to get out of it. And it finally did, because, you know, obviously the captain of the boat was able to say, well, we made it out of that. But for a while, it felt like something was pulling back on that.
Wow.
Really dramatic stuff. And that seems to me to be, if there's any piece of the puzzle that people can point to and say that's somehow involved, this electronic fog seems to be, you know, a piece that those who have made it back alive, which doesn't sound like it's many, that's been a common part of it.
There's like a really famous incident, and you might have some notes on this and be able to tell me what the guy's name was. There was a pilot who claimed he was enveloped in some sort of fog, but I think it also eventually involves him basically feeling like he flew through like a wormhole in space. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Can you?
I didn't write anything down about that.
Neither did I.
But yeah.
I just sat there and I thought, this is cool. I bet Mark will write something down about it.
Yeah.
That's like one of the most common theories amongst a certain subset of people anyway, is that there's like some sort of weird time slip going on within the Bermuda Triangle that you can almost move through almost like a curtain in time where it affects space and time around it.
Right.
And this is based in part on the fact that, like you said, like the even the missing Flight 19 seemed to have, they seemed to be in the air much longer than what should have been allowed by the fuel they had. But there's other incidents where people seem to be, or even people who've survived traveling through what they think was some sort of terror in time and space within the Bermuda Triangle, which is one of my favorite sort of like weird, creepy theories about it, is that you can literally like travel into some sort of time wormhole. And that's what has always fascinated me so much about the Bermuda Triangle. It's not so much the missing planes or like UFOs or any of that. It's all the different theories that you can come up with as to what's causing it.
Yeah.
You know, and the skeptics say, so this is interesting because I actually like this response. The skeptics' most common response to this is that there was nothing that really requires any explanation. Considering the amount of traffic, both flights and cruise ships that pass through the Bermuda Triangle, and also for its large area, the number of incidences are normal compared to statistics anywhere else in the world. So it's just the fact that there are so many planes and ships moving through there that for the amount of traffic going through there, this is the right amount of missing ships and planes and that sort of thing. That's the skeptical response. There isn't even a Bermuda Triangle. It's it's what should be happening given the amount of traffic, which I think is interesting.
It is.
I don't know why I moved away from my notes. I wasn't done. I was like, that's it. We got it.
Boom.
We solved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I encountered that very same list in sort of the skeptical response. And what's the thing that while I can accept that to a degree. I mean, the question still is, where do these things go? I mean, it's one thing to say ships and planes go down or they wreck, you know, or there's an accident. Well, sure. I mean, and you can collect pieces and parts and or you can send divers down and there's a ship down there at the sea floor.
Yeah,
but what if there's nothing?
Yeah, I'd be curious to know how many of all these that are going down, like how many are not found?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's something someone that was actually doing research and taking notes should have maybe written down. It's like how many of these things are actually never found again?
Well,
that's what's so bizarre about it, especially like Flight 19. And okay, so it's like one thing to have Flight 19 go missing. But it's another thing to have Flight 19 go missing and then the rescue plane that goes out to find Flight 19 also go missing.
Right.
And that's a total of...
And nothing ever found.
Right. 27 people dead and are missing.
Yeah. Not even a flotation device.
Yeah.
Not even a piece of the plane found. And I guess that was the number that I was underscoring before, the 50 ships and 20 planes.
Mm-hmm.
That's no missing. Trace.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Methane gas theory, large amount of methane gas is known to exist below the ocean. This is one that keeps coming. These are, I wrote down the ones that come up the most
common. Do you know the term for that? This is wonderful. Please. Oceanic flatulence.
I knew it was going to have something to do with farting. I could sense the fart coming.
You could say it might still be.
gas is known to, so this is one you always hear is that. A large amount of methane gas is known to exist below the ocean floor, trapped in the sediments in form of methane hydrates. If such gas finds its way out and starts rising through the water, it can significantly reduce the density of water in that area. Ships passing over that area can sink in no time. Such gas release can cause explosions and saturate the atmosphere with methane gas, causing planes to crash. So that's one of the most common theories. And then we had the electronic fog. But there's any number of... out there sort of supernatural and paranormal theories as well. My favorite, I don't know how you feel about this, but it's Atlantis. And this is based on the fact that, well, let me just read my notes here. One such explanation is based on the mythical lost city of Atlantis and the advanced technologies the city had left behind. The Atlantis story talks about some underwater rock formations on the ocean floor, which is known as the Bimini Road. These rocks are located near the coast of Bimini Island in the Bahamas. Famous psychic Edgar Cayce once predicted that eventually the city of Atlantis will be discovered and the Bimini Road will be found. In fact, researchers did find stones and other formations in this area in 1968, but called them natural occurring. This goes on and talks a lot about Edgar, but then it says, the legend says that the city of Atlantis heavily depended on some special energy crystals, which were extremely powerful. Those crystals radiated huge amounts of energy, also known as death rays, and caused the navigational instruments of passing ships and airplanes to malfunction. As a result, they would have been lost or sometimes get completely destroyed by the sheer power of the energy. And it's interesting because there's two ways this works. It's like some of the people that subscribe to the Atlantis theory is that Atlantis, you know, was flooded or whatever, and it's down there and somehow those lost crystals are affecting. And there's other people who believe Atlantis is still there. Like it's still functioning. It's just hidden underwater.
Yeah.
Or it's like cloaked like Themyscira or something like that.
Right. And USOs are going down there and coming back out.
Yeah, USOs are hanging out down there. So, like, and it's, I've always loved the idea of the lost empire, mm-hmm. like the lost Atlantis. So this is obviously one of my, do you have a personal favorite theory?
Personal favorite, I think, I don't know. I mean, the one that's most persuasive to me is that it's somehow involved with magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe electromagnetic something or other.
Wet blanket.
I know, it's...
magnets.
It's just a big one of those big red magnets is pulling
some
stuff
Wile
down.
Coyote to, is.
Right. It's coming out of an Acme box.
Yeah.
And then, But, you know, one thing I wanted to mention, and we can do this now mm-hmm. or later, is kind of how these ideas got popularized in mm-hmm. the culture because it was largely through the writing of one man, although.
Gaddis?
Well, Gaddis came up with the
coined
term.
The term.
Yeah.
And that, in 1964, in the February issue of Argosy.
Yes. Man, you are on fire. But
Mark actually looks shocked. I got to be honest with listeners. It's almost like you can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, this is great. But the guy who really put it into the public consciousness, his name's Charles Berlitz. But before three or four years before Berlitz, guess who was writing about the Bermuda Triangle?
Sanderson?
Yeah, got it. Ivan T. Sanderson. A
name that'll probably come up on the show more than any other
name. Oh, yes. Yeah, so he had this book. It's called Invisible Residence in 1970. And he doesn't spend a huge amount of time on the Bermuda Triangle. It's just a chapter. Mm-hmm. But he does sort of do Sanderson-type things, which is just pull all these reports and just sort of set them in front of the reader. And his main point was not really to theorize on what's happening, but just to say he thought that the Bermuda Triangle was just one of many areas like this that were all related to the ocean. You know, and that whole book that he wrote was all about the vast mysteries of the ocean depths and how unexplored really all of it is. So he was talking about a sort of a Japanese version of the Bermuda Triangle and other places around the world where things like this tended to happen as well. And then it was Berlitz who in 74, you know, writes the Bermuda Triangle. It goes on to sell 10 million copies. You know, and this is in the same era as von Daniken's mm-hmm. Chariot of the Gods. And it's sort of this whole cultural dime store paperback era.
I was going to say, like, even as a kid growing up in the late 80s and early 90s, the Bermuda Triangle was still on everyone's mind. Like, mm-hmm. the Unsolved Mysteries covered it. It seemed like every time I was at my grandma's house as a kid, there was something on TV about the Bermuda Triangle. So it was, and this was like right around the time where pyramid power was kind of a big deal, and people were into that stuff, and this kind of played into that, and there was a new age element to it that people really liked, but it was also such an interesting mystery. So one thing we haven't touched on, did I cut you off there?
No.
Did you
get through there? No.
Okay. The one thing we haven't touched on is the UFO angle. And there are a number of UFO sightings that take place in that area. MUFON out of Miami has massive files full of sightings along the shoreline of UFOs out over the Bermuda Triangle. Do you have any info on that you want to share with us?
Well, I think the main thing with the UFO angle is it seems to be sort of a convenient way to explain disappearances. Mm-hmm. Just going back to Berlitz for a second, you know, his writing style is very much in the sort of the tradition of von Daniken or these others that, you know, honestly, very uncritically lump all this stuff and just throw as much unexplained. I mean, if you read the Bermuda Triangle, it's like a who's who of unexplained and paranormal activity in the 1970s, because he references Edgar Cayce. He gets deep into the Atlantis type of theories, you know, and just sort of in passing, he references coelacanths, sea serpents, migration mysteries of how birds get from one place to another. He touches on ocean trenches, rogue waves, sunken civilizations, the shifting of the ocean floor,
wow,
the Sargasso Sea, and just goes on and on. And it's very of a time. You know, it's very, very 70s in the way that he writes. And he would go on to write, 74 was Bermuda Triangle. 77 was Without a Trace, which was sort of a follow-up to the Bermuda Triangle. Backtracking, in 1969, he wrote The Mystery of Atlantis. 72, Mysteries from Forgotten World. 79, The Philadelphia Experiment.
Ooh, nice. We got to talk about that on an upcoming episode.
Yeah. And he even wrote books on the Roswell Incident, Doomsday 1999 AD, which was about volcanic eruptions and sort of, you know, that was based off of Mount St. Helens in part, but was also sort of the Yellowstone caldera, that whole thing. And then in 1987, The Lost Ship of Noah in Search of the Ark of Ararat.
Yeah.
So you can sort of see where he's going. And I think based off of his success, there was an author by the name of Jay Gourlay who wrote The Great Lakes Triangle in 1977.
I wanted to can we talk really quick before we move on or start to wrap up? Like The Great Lakes Triangle, there's quite a few other triangles. There's the Devil's Triangle, or up that's near. Let me Japan or China?
Japan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of these triangle areas that are similar to the Bermuda Triangle. The Great Lakes Triangle is interesting because it's over the Great Lakes, obviously. So mm-hmm. Does it stretch into Lake Erie?
Yeah.
Okay. So mm-hmm. we've got that right above us. We really should become the preeminent Great Lakes Triangle investigators, considering we're so close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just get a
we
boat.
We kind of could.
Could fund it. We'll just go out and start investigating that.
Yeah.
But there's
send
other...
them into the window area. Yeah. They may never come back.
The cool thing about these is they're, like I said, they're different from the other triangles we're going to be talking about in the next 2 weeks. This is on a much grander scale. Unfortunately, that does seem to stretch to the loss of lives and that kind of thing. But one thing I wanted to mention, because I was sitting here going over my notes, and this is incredibly unnerving. The hexagonal clouds forming air bombs theory, this is not a theory. By the way, scientists have noticed formation of strange hexagonal-shaped clouds with straight edges in the Bermuda Triangle. This is a strange and rare phenomenon meteorologists confirm from other such formations of clouds at North Sea and evidence shown by satellite images that they are like air bombs. Air bombs can blast and send out winds to the ocean beneath at speeds of up to 170 miles per hour, which can be dangerous for aircraft or ships passing through it. Additionally, such air bomb explosion can create gigantic waves as high as 45 feet and ocean surface winds of about 100 miles per hour. That's terrifying.
That is terrifying.
Like, that's real. That's something that's out there. Like an air bomb, a cloud that can create an air bomb and destroy us at a moment's notice.
Right. As people who just took 6 flights.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
That is horrifying. No doubt.
So the subject, obviously we've solved it here today. It's probably the Atlanteans. but in closing, like what final thoughts do you have on the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, I tend to think that certainly there's much about the Earth's own magnetic fields.
Oh, we're going back to magnets, Mark.
Yeah, I really am high on the magnet thing. And not only that, but the interplay between that and the forces of the ocean that I'm pretty sure we don't completely understand either.
Or apparently our own sky, if there's freaking clouds that can create...
drop wind bombs on you.
That's
That's
horrifying.
Yeah. So I think, that seems to me to be a place where there just is an infinite amount of information we don't know. Because... typically, we're not there to be there when they happen, or if they are there when things happen, there's catastrophic results, and there's no way to communicate that. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that we didn't even touch on was, as I was going through the research for this, the thing that kept popping into my mind was, a certain book series where people disappear completely.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of the markers of those events seem to have some similarities to them. Mm-hmm. Speaking of window areas, that perhaps that's not just an ocean-based phenomena, but could happen anywhere, which is even worse to consider.
Yeah,
that you could just be wrong place, wrong time. And
might have to dive into expanding on the missing people, missing... 911.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I was legally allowed.
I don't know either. It's kind of scary.
But all right. So that covers the first episode of our Triangle trilogy, the Bermuda Triangle. Obviously, the way the show is going to work is these episodes are primarily going to be brief overviews of a subject rather than some in-depth exploration. That's mm-hmm. not to say we're not going to eventually get to the point where like we either revisit subjects to do a much more deep dive into them, or we expand episodes to be multi-parters. But for now, we're just taking kind of brief looks at these subjects that we find so fascinating. Next week, we're going to dive into the Bridgewater Triangle, which is in Massachusetts. And we're pretty excited to talk about that. If you're on, let's see, I got to do this again. We got to pre-record some sort of ending thing.
The outro.
Yeah, don't let me forget.
Yeah.
If you're on Facebook, Twitter, we're on those avenues. Just find us, facebook.com/monsteropolis. Twitter's at Monster971FM. If you want to send us mail, it's monsteropolismail@gmail.com. We are, if you are interested in watching the shows actually be recorded, we're broadcasting them live on our Facebook page. This is actually broadcasting live right now to a whopping audience of three. Sean Forker.
Oh, cool. That.
So you can watch on there and tune in. Send us mail. We'll read them live on the show. I think that covers it for this week. So thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.